Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com with Paul Dottino. I am John Schmelk. The phone number for you is 201-939-4513 or hashtag Giants Chat. Anything you want to talk about in the world of the NFL or, of course, the New York Football Giants. Open lines. We'll get to your calls early and often today. Paul, you and Lance had a fun show yesterday talking about all the different awards you would give out for the season. Offensive MVP, most improved player, most potential. We can go through that. If you guys listened to the show yesterday and want to give us your award winners, you certainly can. I can throw mine out as well over the course of the show since I wasn't on yesterday, though you can see the full list on Giants.com. It's up there. All the Giants broadcasters send in their choices for all those awards. That was fun. But, Paul, where I want to start today is this, and I think this is something interesting that I think a lot of us are proven wrong about from the start of the year. When Ben McAdoo became the head coach, and, you know, he got a lot of questions back in the spring. We're talking, you know, March, April, May, June, combine, things like that.
Yep.
And he was constantly and consistently asked about how the team has to improve on defense this year. Understandably so. The team back in 2015 was the 32nd ranked defense. They were a sieve. They were terrible. They were the reason the Giants went 6-10. Period. Done. When he was asked those questions, his constant refrain was, yeah, we have to improve the offense, but hold on a second, guys. Just because the offense was good last year does not mean it's going to be good next year. We're starting from scratch with the defense, but we're also starting from scratch with the offense. And I think, frankly, a lot of us kind of rolled our eyes a little bit and said, coach, hold on a second. You're bringing back basically the same offense, except you added Sterling Shepard, and you're getting Victor Cruz back healthy. Why would the offense be worse? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And then, you know what happened, Paul? We got the training camp. We got to the preseason. We got the exhibition games. And what do we see? We saw the offense struggling at practice.
Sluggish.
We saw them sluggish in preseason games. But you know what we said? It's Eli Manning. It's Odell Beckham. We've seen it with Ben McAdoo the last year. The offense is going to be fine. Then what happened again to the regular season? You play the Saints in week two. You score 13 points. And as the season moves along, the big plays start to disappear. And almost disappear completely after that Ravens game. You can't run the football. Eli looks out of sync. And all of a sudden, you get to the end of the year, your defense is in the top 10, and your offense is in the bottom 10. The exact opposite of what we thought before the season. So the theme here is when you go from year to year, regardless of the personnel, you cannot assume any part of your football team is going to be like it was the year before, because every year in the NFL is different.
They were number six, was it, offensively the year before?
I believe in total yards, yes. Or points, something like that. I can check that.
To me, there was no reason to think they'd fall out of the top 10.
Agree. I think everybody thought that, which is why we all scoffed when Ben McAdoo would say those things.
And, you know, I think the big thing for me, John, and I know I've put a lot of stock in this, and some people don't, and it's okay if you don't. I'm not gonna disagree with anybody on this, but I think we all have a different viewpoint as to why the offense had its troubles. We all know about just the core of the problem, and that is lack of a power running game. But
they were eighth, by the way, in total yards, sixth
eighth.
In points.
Sixth in points.
Yes.
Okay, I knew they were sixth in something.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Shane Vereen loss was huge. I said that from the very beginning. I know the first couple of games he didn't do very much, but I really thought
that
when he went out.
And the offense was slow before his injury, too.
It was. But it was my feeling that the Vereen loss was going to hurt their red zone efficiency, and it was going to hurt their third down conversion rate.
Mm-hmm.
That was my feeling. Now, what I did not know, unfortunately, they would not get as much, and I know that Bob Pop and I talked about this statistically speaking, that the tight end production did not fall off as much as we thought perception-wise. But I do believe that the tight end production from a week-to-week basis fell off a lot.
Well, I think what you found, Paul, is that last year with the production from Beckham, and say what you about Ruben Randle, who actually did have decent production over the course of the year, and Thorne Vereen, you didn't necessarily need the tight ends as much. This year, once Vereen went out, you got the sense that much like in the running game when they were daring you to run it by putting six men in the box,
yeah,
they were daring you to throw it down the seam to the tight end by playing their deep safeties out by the numbers and leaving the middle of the field open. So once teams dare you to do something you can't do it, that's going to cripple your whole offense.
I'll be honest with you. When Will Tye caught that 51-yard pass between the hash marks the other day in Green Bay.
Did you pinch yourself?
I was like, where was that all year?
Yeah, I know.
Seriously, I mean, I'm laughing, but am I the only one who thought that?
No. And look, they had the exact same opportunity for a play like that against Green Bay in the first matchup when Eli threw it a little too far. And Will Tye couldn't come up with it, which would have been a tough catch, but a ball you certainly could have caught.
And would have been gone for a touchdown. In this case, there was one DB back, and they were able to stop him after 51. But, you know, that type of play should have been there all year. And for some reason, it wasn't. And I'm not 100% sure why. Could it have been routes? Could it have been, Eli didn't have enough time to get it there? Could it have been enough that he didn't have enough time to pick out his progressions and find that one? There's a lot of reasons, I'm sure. But, you know, it seemed to me that even when Larry Donnell had his breakout year of 63 catches a few years back, he made a lot of those plays.
Absolutely.
And that was missing.
No question. All right, folks, if you're watching on Twitter, thanks so much for joining us. If you want to watch the rest of the show, go to Giants.com or your Giants mobile app, and you can check us out there. So a couple other things I want to mention, Paul, before we get to the calls at 201-939-4513. And again, anything you want to talk about, we can. We can even look ahead to the games over the weekend if you like. The Giants have been signing players to some futures contracts. I want to get that out there, too, so that's newsworthy. A couple names are players that Giant fans will recognize. Dante Dion. A DB that they will cut on IR over the course of the year.
The Tito Dark Horse, Dante Dion.
The Lance Meadow-sized cornerback out of Boise
this
State.
This is true.
Who showed a lot of spunk in training camp, struggled in preseason games.
Big heart.
Struggled a lot in preseason games.
When he was on the outside. Correct. He's a slot corner is what he is.
Yeah, but again, we'll see how he can do in real games against bigger wide receivers.
Yep.
Another name that fans will recognize, and he actually got a lot of playing time, I believe, it was against the Packers earlier in the year. Michael Hunter out of Oklahoma State, a defensive back.
Yes.
Who we played a bit in one of those games earlier in the year.
That's correct.
Name fans should recognize. Stanley Mapanga, somebody who was let go on the final cut.
He's been around a few years in this
right?
league.
So he'll be back on a futures contract. Darius Powell, Kevin Norwood, two guys that have been in camp with the Giants
receivers,
before. You
yep.
should recognize. And then Adam Geddes, an offensive lineman in Iowa who actually started a couple games for the Giants this year when they had the injuries to Newhouse and Pugh, and he had to go in there and start at left guard. Some other names that people probably don't know, John Jalapio, an offensive lineman out of Florida, Jacob Huseman out of Tennessee Chattanooga, Ryan Murphy, a defensive back out of Oregon State, Keith Wenning, a quarterback out of Ball State, Jordan Williams, a defensive end out of Tennessee, and Michael Bowie, an offensive lineman at a Northeastern State, which apparently is in Oklahoma. So, but why don't you give fans an idea of what future contracts are and what the significance of them are for the Giants?
Well, none of these guys are saviors. Let's make that very clear. What this does is it basically ties the guy up so that you know you're going to have him through the offseason program and that you'll be able to bring him to, unless for some reason you cut him, you'll be able to bring him to training camp. And that's what this is all about. To me, they're basically back end of the roster guys, although a guy like Dante Dion, for me, you guys know how much I really admire his game. He does have physical challenges because he is a rather diminutive, let's face it, short guy.
He's Lance Meadow.
Yes.
He's the Lance Meadow of cornerbacks.
He really is.
And he might actually have a bigger mouth than Lance Meadow, which is saying something, by the way.
Well, he's a lot funnier than Lance
is. Oh, well, I mean, who isn't?
I mean, you know. Dante Dion was the nice gentleman who, during the Party City Halloween dress-up that the Giants have every year.
He's a great guy.
Was the bacon. Walking around the locker room in a costume as a strip of bacon from head to toe.
So you're saying he provided some sizzle? In the New York Giants
locker room. Oh, very nice, John.
I'm sorry. I had to. Very cheesy. I apologize.
Yes. But, you know, always with a smile on his face, great attitude. And, you know, over the years, the Giants have actually had some luck with guys of that nature, by the way. The Kevin Dockerys of the world, the Manuel McDaniels of the world.
Charles James, by the way, has been in the league for a while.
Charles James, another one.
Guy.
Yes. So, you know, there is room for a guy like that if he can prove himself on special teams and, again, if you use him in certain spots and certain matchups. He's the guy of all the people you just named. He's the guy who I think has the best chance of making the 53 next summer.
And these are the group of guys that, in addition to your undrafted free agents and your draft class and maybe some free agent signings, will make up your offseason and training camp roster. So
right.
These are the veterans,
as I said before,
and young veterans. That'll kind of be the bulk of that group.
And almost every one of these guys have spent time on the Giants practice squad within the last year.
Right.
Almost all of them have. And so, to be honest, there's probably a very high percentage chance that some of them, if they make it back into the roster next summer, next fall, they'll be practice squad, to be perfectly frank with you. In all honesty, that's probably where most of them will land, if at all.
Unless they get beaten out by some of the undrafted free agents this year, which
Correct.
Is also a possibility.
And then again, I think a guy like Deion could make the 53. But that's what those guys are. Nonetheless, it's always nice to take a look at the list and see who's there.
All right, 201-939-4513. Richard in West Palm Beach, Florida. He'll join us first. Richard, how are you on this lovely Thursday afternoon?
Thanks for taking my call.
Hello.
Thank you for calling.
This is a point of interest. On Tuesday, I was listening to the Dan Patrick Show, and he had Aaron Rodgers on the phone.
Okay.
And he was asked, Aaron was asked about the hit on Jody Nelson by Leon Hall. Was it targeting? And Aaron said, absolutely not. He said, this game is so fast, a man moves one way or another quickly and gets hit a certain way. He said, he don't even believe in targeting unless it's so flagrant and the guy is on the ground, can't move his head, and he gets hit by a defensive man. Then and only then should that flag be thrown.
Yeah, Richard, first of all, technically there's no such thing as targeting in the NFL. That is a penalty in college. In the NFL, the crux of it is hitting a defensive receiver with the crown of your helmet, which is basically
Correct.
Spearing them. Now, 99% of the time, that call is only going to be made if you make contact with the other player's neck or head area with your helmet.
Yeah.
It's very rare that you'll see the helmet to the midsection or the ribs or something like that get called on a defenseless receiver. I know Mike Pereira during the broadcast, Paul and I didn't watch the broadcast. We were obviously doing the game on the radio. So we didn't see the broadcast, but my understanding is that he kind of railed on the fact that should have been a targeting penalty. When I saw it live, I just thought it was a really good hit, to be honest with you. I didn't think there was anything wrong with it. I'm glad Aaron Rodgers said the same thing. Look, you never want to lead with your helmet. It's bad technique, first of all. You're not coached to do that. But I think it's really hard to limit that much where a defensive player can hit. I understand not going after the head. That's a safety issue. I'm 100% for that. But once you start litigating stuff in the midsection, what the hell is a defensive player supposed to do at that point?
Really?
Yeah.
So you have a running back go through the line, and he's looking. He picks his head up looking for an opening, and the tackler comes in at mid-waist, and all of a sudden the running back drops his head.
Well, Richard.
A collision.
Well, remember, though, Richard, those rules do not apply to runners. They only apply to defenseless receivers. So that would not apply to a running back that has the ball. So they still consider Nelson a defenseless receiver in that position, which, by the way, I think was borderline, too, because he already had the ball in his hand for a little bit before the hit took place.
Right. I agree.
Yeah, I saw the play also, watched the whole game. But it was what it was, and thank God there was nothing out of it.
Yeah.
And I thought we had a great year. I was very happy with this team, and I'm really looking forward to next year, even though I'm 83. Have a great day, guys.
Hey, great stuff, Richard. Thanks so much for the call, and I'm happy you're looking forward to next year.
Sounds like he's more old school than me.
That's not possible. And by the way, I'm sure the Giants are not too thrilled that they did the Dallas Cowboys a favor, because it doesn't look like Jordy Nelson's going to play this week. Which certainly, I would say, helps out a Cowboys secondary, which has had some issues with some really good wide receivers this year.
Yeah, certainly makes the Packers' challenge a little bit more difficult. But the way Cobb played the other night, who knows?
Hey, it's Aaron Rodgers, man.
Tell me about it. Boy, he threw some laser beams the other day, John.
Once he got hot in the second half, man.
I'm still shaking my head at some of those. Even the first touchdown pass that he threw.
Oh, the guy wasn't open. The guy wasn't open.
How'd he get it there? I still don't know how he got it there. And I will tell you that when he went down to make the diving catch in the back left corner of the end zone, I wasn't even sure initially that he had made the catch, had control of the ball, and landed in bounds when he slid out of bounds. I wasn't even sure right away.
It was a tough catch because Sensabaugh was on him on that play, right?
I think he was.
The problem is that if Sensabaugh would have turned his head to look at the quarterback, he could have knocked it down. He had his back to the quarterback, and Rodgers saw literally inches worth of space, Paul, on that play, and he snuck it in there right on his right shoulder, and he just got the ball in there. But you're right, that was a really, really difficult throw.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's what they call throwing a receiver open. And that's what really great quarterbacks do. They will complete passes to receivers that aren't open, but they throw it to the right spot where they can throw a guy open, which is really impressive.
You know what's funny about that play? It was the Davante Adams catch. Yeah. It was Sensabaugh.
Okay.
And that was only the second time. That was one, two, three. It was the fourth Packers possession of the game. And only the second time to that point, fourth possession of the quarter, only the fifth time to that point in the game that he had actually bought time with his feet. He had not been doing a ton of running around. And the Giants sacked him four times in the first half.
Yeah, and I thought the Giants did a good job of containing him while rushing him. Now, that didn't work as well in the second half, as we all saw. But the Giants, I thought, in the first half, you can't really argue with the game plan against Aaron Rodgers. Until those final 3 minutes, they did a wonderful job.
I know. Whatever.
I don't look at the Tino. I'm picking up memories.
Oh, man.
201-939-4513. Let's go to Richie in Long Island. Richie, you're up next on Big Blue Kickoff Live. How are you, buddy?
Hey, guys. Nice to talk to you again.
Thanks for calling in.
Yes,
Richie,
sir.
How are you?
No problem. Everything's good. Just I want to thank you for all your effort that you guys do throughout the season. Big Blue Kickoff Live, Giants First and 10, Train Camp Live, all those shows. I just really appreciate it and enjoy watching it. Thank the guys behind the scenes.
Well, Richie, do me a thank you for watching. Thank you for checking out online, because without you guys, we wouldn't do it. So thank you.
No doubt.
Yeah. And as I kind of looked at that a little base pass, I was like, I literally have a giant addiction. I probably need a second job or something like that to compensate for this time.
Hey, Richie, I have a great idea. Maybe you and Dottino, follow each other on Twitter, send each other a direct message. You guys can become friends. Then in your spare time, instead of getting a second job, you guys can just talk Giants football all day. I think that's – and it works for everybody. It'll give you something to do. It gets Dottino out of my hair, and everybody wins.
Just kind of that realization that there's not going to be any more football till about August.
Yeah, I hear you.
Just remember this, my friend. There are 20 teams every year that don't even get one playoff game.
That is true.
Yeah, we got an extended week this year, I guess. Watching the game, it was just, when I was watching in the second half, I get it. Aaron Rodgers heated up, but what happened with the defense kind of, that they were getting to the Rodgers that we saw in the first quarter? Because if you saw the first quarter, you'd be like, oh, this is actually going to be, we got a chance. I know that Hail Mary happened, certain things like that for momentum, but it just seemed like, there wasn't any pressure or it wasn't getting there in the second half. Really bad to see that.
The only thing I would say to you, and I know that, John's talked to Spags, I've talked to some of the other defensive assistants, there's no question that as that game wore on, and it was cold and nasty, let's not make any mistake about it. I was down there on the sideline. It wasn't fun. As they kept trying to chase him and contain him, and he started throwing these laser beams, it takes a lot of steam out of you. And unfortunately, the Packers also held the ball for 10 minutes more than the Giants did in the game. So the time of possession and the tilting of the field in combination with the weather was really wearing out that front four.
But at first, was it that the time of possession, the Giants kind of had that number? Early, yes.
But as that game wore on in the second half, between the field tilting – and, again, really rough weather, and the way the momentum was going the other way, you'd be surprised how that just takes a lot out of you. It's like sucking the life out of guys. And you got to remember something, too.
And, Richie, by the way, overall for the game, time of possession was won by the Packers 34-31 to 25-29. So, just FYI.
That's a lot. That's a lot, yeah. And that's not the way. That's not the way you want it if you're the Giants.
First quarter, second quarter was a little bit more for the Giants side, but I guess this time we're on, they definitely dominated.
Well, Richie, I can tell you in the first half, the Giants, they had time possession here in the first half on this list. Ah, they don't. I thought they had that in the first half stats. I will try to get that number for you if I can, Richie. One other thing I want to add to what Paul was saying too. You're right. I talked to Spags. He said, first of all, Aaron Rodgers got really hot. And that's part of it. And part of that's the Hail Mary. And that's kind of started them rolling a little bit. Yeah. Number two, obviously, Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie being out.
Huge.
Killed you. And I think at halftime, I'm sure the Packers went in and the coaches, you know, brought out the picture and said,
absolutely.
Hey, Aaron Rodgers, guess who your best wide receiver on the field is right now? It's Randall Cobb. Look who's covering him. All right? And they put a big bullseye on that position and said, you know what, we're going to attack that and see
without
how it goes.
Doubt.
And once they started making some plays on Trevin Wade and Cody Sensible and Leon Hall and whoever else was there, then Steve Spagnuolo counters and goes, you know what, I can't man up anymore. This is a problem. They're going to just go after this guy. So I got to start playing zone. What happened when the Giants went to zones? The Packers ran some play action, and they kept dragging those wide receivers deep across the field, and if you can't get pressure and Aaron Rodgers buys time, if you're in a zone defense, guess what? You're not going to cover deep wide receivers going across the field. Just to bring it back to what the Giants' issues are, Richie, real quick, Ben McAdoo talked about how do you beat zone coverage of two safeties deep, which, by the way, is what the Giants are playing a lot in the second half. You need time to beat those coverages because you need time to drag those deep wide receivers across the field. So all those dominoes kept falling, and it just got worse and worse and worse. The momentum started, and that was pretty much all she wrote.
And by the way, on one of the fourth quarter touchdowns to Cobb, the Giants actually did a switch. They lined up Wade on him, and you knew that Rodgers was going to go there, so they did a switch. As soon as the ball was snapped, Apple and Wade switched.
Really?
And
I didn't see that one.
Oh, yeah, they pulled the switch.
Okay.
And they handed the receivers off, and Apple then had to cover Cobb, who, I'm in the wrong direction here with the camera, but from Cobb's perspective, he then ran into the left corner, ran left to the end zone, to the post. And Apple was late in getting over on the switch. And that's why Cobb was open for the touchdown. I mean, Spags tried to get creative. He's like, okay, this isn't working the way it is now. We're going to switch, and Apple's going to wind up taking Cobb once he gets into the route. But he was slow getting there. Touchdown.
Yeah. It's you know, it's good. It's just sad to see it because, you know, opportunities like this are not guaranteed. You know, even though we're, you know, we see that the team are progressing, we can be like, hey, you know what, the defense is doing really good. You know, everything looks good. You know, next season we're 11-5, but next year, for all we know, you know, could miss the playoffs. And times like these, any player knows, is not guaranteed. So, and Eli Manning's, you know, clock is just ticking. You know, a couple more years maybe. I mean, I definitely hope we make the playoffs again. I really do, but, you know, it's not a guarantee. And what I saw what I noticed is some just younger players, you know, struggling. Let's say, you know, if the team doesn't make it back to the playoffs, you know, Eli Apple struggled, Eric Flowers struggled, you know, Odell Beckham had almost as many drops as he did catches. He had 3 drops and 4 catches for, what, I think 33 yards?
Yeah.
Great player. I mean, all the sideshow stuff aside, but really great player. But, you know, it's just sad to see that. But, you know, guys, thank you for taking my call.
I'll call back,
you know, during the next overtime period. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
There's one thing he said, John, that I'd like you to touch on, too, because you've been around here a lot of years. And I can't say it enough. We touch on it on First and 10, which is on MSG Friday night at 5, the first premiere show. It's the wrap-up show, Bobby and Carl and Howard and Harry.
It is being edited as we speak by our best men, top men.
It always is. but this is an important point, and I want to make it now because the caller just mentioned Eli Manning.
Please.
I have seen Eli Manning get emotional twice in his 13 years with the Giants.
You know what? I have not watched that media avail yet. I was going to do it later on today.
Oh, well, then maybe I shouldn't go there.
No, you can go there.
Okay.
What's your opinion?
The first time and the most emotional I've ever seen him was the Tom Coughlin departure.
Absolutely.
Eli stood in front of his locker, and he was weary-eyed. He was bloodshot-eyed. His eyes were tearing up. He was a mess. He was choking. Everything short of tears actually coming out.
Was he that bad on Monday?
It was the second most emotional I've ever seen him. He was horrible when Tom left.
Was it
this time? His eyes were glassy. He spoke very distinctly and slowly and reflectively, and I got a real sense that he was emotional.
He was basically missing an opportunity this late in his career to do something when
he talked
the team
about
was good.
13 years in the league. Mm. You don't get to the playoffs every year. You need playoff experience to understand that it's a different animal. He really thought, and I think he's right in retrospect, and I was wrong not to calculate it. The Giants had only 15 players with postseason experience going into Green Bay. The Packers have been to the playoffs 8 years in a row.
Yeah.
It made a difference.
Yeah, you wonder, especially for Beckham and Shepard, you know, two guys, maybe they were just too jumped, you know, too jazzed up, and they were just too fired up and they put too much pressure on themselves. I mean, who knows?
And, you know, I think it really showed itself that when the Packers did come out in the third quarter, and even though Eli tried to stop the momentum with the bomb to King that made it 14-13, think about it. Outside of that play and the fourth down stop, what went right for the Giants in the second half?
Zero.
Zero. And I really think because, and John, again, we were in the building. Lambeau was rabid. Those people were just pushing those Packers into the next round as hard as they possibly could. The weather was incredibly cold. I mean, my feet were numb in the fourth quarter, and I was only on the field for the second half.
It's because you didn't wear boots like a dummy.
Well, I don't.
At least you got your hat on.
Yes, thank goodness for the boss. And what I'm saying to you is I understand now in retrospect what Eli meant. You have to experience the playoffs to truly understand how to handle it, especially adversity in a tight spot.
Yeah, and emotionally.
Yeah. Eli was really the only guy in the second half of that game, as that game was being pushed out of their hands, who tried to, I won't say tried, they all tried, but who really had the wherewithal and the mental toughness and the emotions to handle the moment and to try to stop the water from flooding the ship.
And we did talk to them in the locker room a little bit during the week about the importance of playoff experience, but, you know, people are like, hey, you know what, it's really not that big of a deal. But in retrospect, especially,
it was.
Just, and I'm going to single out a player here, and I don't mean to just say it's all him, but for a guy like Beckham, for example, who in the past has let his emotions get the best of him from time to time in bad ways. I think he wanted to win so bad and try so hard and do so well that it might have adversely affected him. You know what I mean?
The question,
and he put too much pressure on himself. I think Eli actually mentioned something about that in his presser. Was it McAdoo or Reese? Somebody did.
One of the questions asked to was it McAdoo or Reese was the game too big for him?
Yeah.
I think that was the way it was phrased. And you and I both know Odell Beckham can't stand to lose.
He is a
competitor to the 10th degree.
And that's why I don't think the game was too big for him. I think maybe he made the game too big of a deal.
I don't want to use the word, but I don't know that there's a better word. I think there were maybe some Giants who pressed.
Yeah, I could see that. By the way,
they certainly didn't have the wherewithal to overcome the adversity when the ship was going down. And I do think that they'll be better for that if they get to the playoffs again.
And not to scare Giant fans, but I'll do it anyway, because Richie, I thought, make a good point.
Yeah.
A lot of Giant fans, players said this too on Monday, that, oh, now we got to wait 365 days to try again in the playoffs. Well, first of all, you got to get into the playoffs, okay?
Darn straight.
And you got to work your rear end off now for the next 250 days, whatever it is, to earn your way back into the playoffs, all right? Before the season even starts, off-season workouts, getting in shape, OTAs, minicamp, all that nonsense that guys hate. Last year, 2015 NFL playoffs, Bengals went 12-4. What did they finish this year? Exactly. Denver Broncos, 12-4. Washington Redskins, 9-7.
I think you get the point.
Minnesota Vikings, 11-5. Do you think the Carolina Panthers thought after going 15-1 and making the Super Bowl, and by the way, losing only one or two significant players, that they would be under 500 and not playing a playoff game? Do you think the Arizona Cardinals, after getting to the NFC Championship game, thought they'd be sitting at home, bringing back an identical roster after going 13-3. I mean, that's not 11-5. 13-3 and 15-1. Do you think those teams thought they were going to be at home in January this year? I don't think so.
The quicksand of parity.
201-939-4513. Travis in Queens. He's up next. Travis, what's going on, pal?
Hello?
We're going to try Travis. He's on line one, Dave. We can go to Travis. There we go. I know you lost the screen. It's okay. Travis, what's going on, pal?
Hey, what's up? How you guys doing?
Doing well, Travis. Okay. How are you?
Paul, it's a pleasure talking to you first, Tom.
Sure thing. Thank you.
No problem. I just want to say you guys make a good point. I didn't think about that far as, you know, they're being so young in the playoffs. It gives me a little hope then for the Cowboys losing since they're young, too.
How'd you wind up going there?
Well, you know, they are young for the skill position players, Travis, but those offensive linemen playing the playoffs 2 years ago when they made it, they played two playoff games, including a loss to the Packers.
Right.
Jason Wynn, obviously, has been there before. Terrence Williams was there before. Dez Bryant was there before. But Prescott, Elliott, and a lot of the guys on defense played a lot of games. This will be Sean Lee's first playoff game, believe it or not, because of all his injuries.
Yes.
Guys like you know, Brandon Carr have been there, but you know, Jones, their safety, has never been there before. Their defensive line is young. So you're right. On some parts of their roster, Travis, they are a little bit young. You're right about that.
So watch if the Packers have a lead in the second half. Watch if the Cowboys are able to stem the tide or if they just go on a slide.
Right.
That's what happened to the Giants.
Yeah, and during that game, the Packer game, when it was over, you know, just listening to you guys, more so you, Lance, because you said that, you know, we was in zone.
And I thought, or John.
And I'm sorry, John.
That's okay.
I thought that we were pressing too much on defense. Like, Thad felt like, you know what, I'm going to live by the blitz and we die by the blitz because we wasn't getting home. So I was saying to myself, we should be in more coverage and then zone blitzes because we're not getting home and he's getting heck of a time back there just sitting in the pocket.
Well, Travis, once Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie left that game,
it changed everything.
You couldn't blitz anymore. I honestly think if DRC was healthy, you would have seen him bring a little bit more heat to make Rodgers uncomfortable. Once Rodgers is out of that game, you cannot throw out zero coverage or one safety high coverage and you got, you know, Trevin Wade covering Randall Cobb in the slot. It's not going to work.
And I don't want to digress here, but Bobby said something to John and I during the podcast we were doing for him yesterday. And he's 1,000% right. If DRC's in the game, that Hail Mary doesn't happen. He's too good at the ball. Ball skills,
and he's
height,
tall and long.
Speed, and he has a magnet for the ball.
Agree.
There's no way that Hail Mary happens if DRC's in the game.
Gotcha. And just three more points. I think we take things for granted because it's so small. Like Eli Manning, you guys was referencing. I just want to, you know, detail more on. It's for the fact that, you know, when you look over his years, his last 4 years, I believe 5 years, his offensive line has been, if he was great in it, it's been the best, maybe like a C+. And it's not fair to Eli that, you know what I mean, that we treated him such. It was just like our defense, we get there, and you know what I mean, we go from there. Eli, he could turn it on, which we was seeing in that game. But it's like, man, if you give Eli a decent offensive line where, like, you know, some pro ballers and stuff like that, and we will see the Eli that we've seen in the playoffs in this Green Bay game during the regular season. You know, a lot of, like, I think somebody said, you know, with quarterbacks, what happens with them is they get all the credit when everything goes good. When it goes bad, they get all the credit as far as it going bad as well.
Yes, sir.
And then another thing, as far as, you know, like the off season, what do you guys, like, we need so much. We all know that we need so much.
Yeah, Travis, you know what, though? It's not like it was last year. Last year, going into the offseason, you could say you need so much. I think Paul and I figured like 7 or 8 starters, right? Last year they needed heading into the offseason. This year, I think you're looking anywhere from 3 to 4. Maybe.
Oh.
You know, I don't think it's nearly as bad as it's been the last couple off seasons.
I think the want list is probably half.
Yeah. I mean, you look at an offensive line, tight end, maybe a fullback, right, maybe a linebacker, something like that.
So my question is, so in the draft going 23, like I know our history is, you know, we pick the best player available.
Right.
So let's say out of all those positions that we need and it just so happen to be, like, at every position, there's a great player. There's, like, a A-minus player at each level that we need.
Offensive tackle. Offensive tackle, and I'm not even going to let you finish your sentence. It's that simple. Paul, do you agree?
If what, you're going to get an argument for me on that? Honestly, do you really expect
Travis,
me to put up a fight?
Offensive tackle, offensive tackle, offensive tackle, offensive tackle, offensive tackle, offensive tackle. Then maybe you think about a tight end. How about
all right.
that?
All right. And they should probably move Flowers to right guard. You know what I mean? Like how Collins did for the Cowboys. I would move him to right guard because he's a physical dude. His feet is not I would move him to right guard. I think he would suit better there. Right tackle, too, but I think right guard. He's more like a mauler to me. So.
All right, final point, Travis. Make it quick.
No, you guys been hearing from
me. Oh, that's it. Perfect. Thank you,
pal. I guess that's all right. Take care, guys.
Thank you, Travis. Great call. Good stuff.
You know, I only say this about the tight end. You know, Will Johnson will be back, and I do expect him to be the starting tight end. So the tight end they got to get, John, to me, has got to be a role-playing tight end. He's got to be a pass catcher. He's got to have height. He's got to be a guy who you can use in matchups. To me, Will Johnson's the starting tight end next year. And there'll be situations where
you'll
move him into the H-back or fullback spot, and then one of the other guys, whether it's Adams or a new tight end, is going to be on the line.
You call him the starter, though, but to me, the way this offense works, he's still only playing 50% of the snaps, if that.
Not necessarily.
I think you're looking at second and third down, second and third and long. I think you're putting the pass receiving tight end in there.
See, if they're going to establish any kind of a power running game next year, and I'd like to think they after this year they need to do it.
It's the West Coast offense.
But I think if you're going to have Will Johnson to maximize his effectiveness and you're going to use some of the running game to balance things out, he will play in a double tight end set. You see, you can't use him in a double tight end set.
That's fine. That's fine. I'll buy that.
You know, if you're going to pull him off the field. So I think he is going to play a lot.
I was more talking about when they're in 11, which is what they've been in so much this year. If they're going to go more 12 personnel and put a pass tight end with Will Johnson, then I could see Johnson playing more snaps. That I'll buy.
That's what I want to do. On second down and three, I'm thinking there's a possibility I'm going double tight end.
What are you doing second down and eight?
Well, that's a different story now. That's why the supplemental tight end that you take this year is going to have to be a pass catcher.
And again, this is the point that we made on Bob's podcast, by the way, Podcast Giants Cast WFAN. Real quick, the guy you draft is probably going to be a pass-catching tight end.
Right.
Especially if you draft somebody in the first two, three rounds, because, frankly,
probably
that's what these guys
round.
Are going to do. Whatever. But that guy can develop into a blocker down the road. It might take a year or two, because they're not asked to do that
in
college.
If he's got it in here.
Right, you have to want to do it. Absolutely, no question about it. No argument for me. But it's funny. You would think, logically, the run game's a little simpler. You could pick that up a little bit sooner. But the way the college game is now, better chance of a guy coming and catching passes than coming and being a good blocker right away. So I think if you, again, want to dedicate the resources to it in the draft and you make it a day one or two pick, you're going to get a guy that can catch the ball a little bit and challenge that seam. And I think that's what you're looking for. You're looking for the guy that those safeties have to worry about beating you down the seam. That's what you need. And you'll even live with a couple drop passes short, whatever. You want the guy with the speed and the height to get down that seam and put the fear of death into those tight ends.
Yeah. And you know, so that's why, to me, it's not a first or second rounder. I'm willing to go third round there because I'm so...
Yeah, but you might not even get a good player in the third round. You're picking that late.
Because all these tight ends are pass catchers now, there's a bunch of them. Now, I haven't done the draft study yet, but
I got a feeling
that you could probably still find a pass-catching tight end because they're growing these suckers on trees nowadays.
Yeah, just remember this, though. There haven't exactly been a ton of really young, good tight ends coming out of the draft recently either. It's been a really tough conversion for a lot of these guys coming out of the draft. I mean, Hunter Henry had a nice rookie year this year with the Chargers, but, you know, Jesse James has been okay for Pittsburgh. There's not exactly a lot of really good tight ends running around here either.
I mean, when you talk about starters, my priority is I got to get myself, obviously, a stud lineman. I think I got to get myself a power running back to complement Perkins. He's probably going to see more snaps than that pass-catching tight end.
I'll buy that.
So I'm putting a higher preference on that.
How about a big wide receiver?
And there's a possibility that I'm putting a big preference on a big, tall, skyscraping receiver, too.
How about a linebacker?
I wouldn't mind getting a pass rusher, folks, because I don't think JPP is going to wind up getting the numbers he wants here. I think someone outside the building is going to blow him away.
Because like we talked about, it's not a great defensive end free agent class.
It's not.
Once again, going to be a lot of money out there for teams to spend.
Okay, so they got to have to put a bigger premium in the draft on getting a pass rusher.
Now, look, you can never say, Paul, you can never say it's a bad idea to draft a pass rusher.
No.
Never, never. You're absolutely right.
So,
no question.
I mean, yes, I want that tight end, John, but I think he's got to be a little bit lower on the priority list.
I think, unfortunately, I part of me wants to say I feel like they've put the tight end lower on the priority list enough. I'm ready to put resources into getting a really good tight end. I'm ready for it.
I understand.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, there's always a possibility that Jarrell Adams could do a little bit more next year,
no,
too.
No, that's true. No argument there. David in North Carolina, he was next up. David, how are you? What's going on?
Hey, guys. Just one comment, and I hope the fans have been listening the last couple of days. I thought, you know how when Big Blue Kickoff Live used to come on, we had the Coughlin voice, you know, pumping everybody up. I think – was it Tuesday you and Lance were on? Yeah, Tuesday?
Yeah, Tuesday, that's right.
I think your opening monologue ought to be that was the best monologue in Big Blue Kickoff Live history, because I'm getting so sick and tired of people questioning Cruz, questioning the play calling, questioning McAdoo, should he still be calling off offensive plays. Listen, guys. The reason this team could not score points is it could not beat one defense, or basically two different looks. And you keep pointing it out over and over and over again, and I hope it's sinking in on how truly just dumbfounding it is that we couldn't beat man two safety high or a cover two zone with the safety side. I mean, literally defenses were saying, here is 5 yards. Take it. And if you get past the linebackers, you've got 8 yards. Take it. Here it is. Take the yards. And we could not do that. I could literally make the case that this is the worst offensive line in football. And I didn't think anybody picked up on it, but, John, you've said it several times. I thought it was the best part of Ben McAdoo's interview. Jordan Renan asked him, well, do you think you need to figure out a way to get Odell the ball in those looks? And, John, you hit the nail on the head. I picked it out as soon as I heard it in the press conference. What does Ben McAdoo say? You can get him the ball, but you need time.
You need time to do it. Yep.
Yes, sir. There it is, guys.
You said
everybody
it.
Listening, I wanted to sink in on how truly terrible this offensive line was. It either couldn't provide the time for receivers like Victor Cruz to run a route to get open, or Odell Beckham to run a route to get open. Do you wonder why there were so many slants, so many dump-offs?
So the fact that I've been preaching this for 5 years and caught so much grief and continue to catch grief from a lot of fans means nothing to you. I'm just saying.
He's complimenting us, Paul. Take the compliment.
I mean, literally, like, I even get mad at Eric Flowers only gave up so many sacks. We can't even judge. I mean, I can judge his performance with the eye test, and I think most of us realize with the eye test that he hasn't done a good job at progressing. But, I mean, we can't even really judge how bad he's played, because so many of the passes are just quick dump-offs and outs because we absolutely don't trust him. I mean, in a normal offense, he may have given up even more pressure.
Now, David,
I
want to chime in here for a second, because I don't want to, you know, put all these guys – into the same category, because I do think John Jerry is a pretty darn good pass blocker. I don't think he gives up a tons of sacks, to be honest with you.
He's solid. He's
and
all right.
You know, he's been okay. And Weston Richburg and Justin Pugh are pretty good pass blockers.
They,
so
well,
I think the interior guys can
– but,
right, go ahead.
That's a great point, but right back to your point, I think you make an excellent point. I think John Jerry is a very good pass blocker. And Pugh is our best all-around lineman. Can do a little bit of everything. Can pull, block. Weston
Agreed.
Richburg, good pass blocker. But what – you know what? I don't think Weston Richburg is a very good run blocker.
I don't think – I think he needs to get better. I think both those guys need to get better at run blocking. I think that's fair.
Here's what needs to happen, okay? Go back to the 3rd-and-1 near the end of the first half when Bobby Rainey was in the game. And I've said this since the moment it happened. It's not Bobby Rainey's fault he didn't convert the 3rd-and-1.
Absolutely.
It's the offensive
Absolutely.
Line's fault, because they lost the line of scrimmage. Larry Zonka could not have gotten that first down,
Absolutely.
Okay? the offensive line on that third and one collapsed. Now, had they had a fullback in the game, which, of course, the team does not have, maybe you get the push, or maybe if you've got bigger, stronger offensive linemen, you get the push. That's a first down. Green Bay never gets the ball back with 90 seconds left in the first half. The Hail Mary doesn't happen. The Giants march down and score more points, and maybe this game never turns out the way it did. Because you don't have a power running game, and you don't have an offensive line that is able to punch people in the mouth when it has to. I've been crying about this for 5 years. How much more do I have to say?
Last point, and I'll so maybe a couple more guys can get in. You know, and we keep hearing from disgruntled fans. Well, gosh, man, you know, Eli was coming out on all cylinders. Part of that was, unbeknownst to anyone in the rest of the world, the Packers, maybe they were trying to force a turnover early. They came out in single high.
Yeah, David, do you know why?
At the line.
David, I can tell you exactly why. And going into this game, I saw it on tape, and I actually talked to Mike Sullivan, and I confirmed what I saw. And he said, John, you're absolutely right. When you get the Packers into third and medium, between third and like 1 and 5 or 2 and 4, they will show a lot of single high and they'll try to blitz a little bit. In that first quarter, the Giants were actually in 3rd and 3 and 3rd and 4 a lot. And that's why the Packers went into their single high. So it gets back to getting into good down and distance. You can play two safeties deep when you're in 3rd and 8. You want to do a little bit extra and do a little tricky stuff when you have teams in 3rd and 3 because it's easier to convert. So that's why, and you're absolutely right, David. That's a great eye by you watching the game. In that first quarter, the Packers weren't a lot of single high. After that, not so much.
And this is why the NFL is such a great game, because everything has a domino effect and everything is a spider web. And why fans need to understand, you have to peel back the layers of the onion. There is no one simple 5-second Twitter answer for every problem.
Yeah.
But nobody wants to hear that. They want the instant gratification, like the Tylenol is going to work in 30 seconds. It doesn't work that way.
Hey, get this. Even on the Tavares King play, think about this for a second. Even on the Tavares King, you know, listen, Victor Cruz, yeah, maybe a shell of himself. In this offense, I consider the slot receiver the number two anyway, so really Victor Cruz was playing the number three all year, but people want to put that number two label on him.
Good
Go
point.
Back to the Tavares King play. Where was Odell Beckham? He was on the bench. So, again, the Packers gave a different look.
Mm-hmm.
They gave a totally different look because Beckham wasn't even in the formation. They probably thought it was going to be a run with Beckham out of the formation, not even on the field, allows King to get behind the coverage.
And remember, Tavares King hadn't even played a whole lot during the course of the season. And even though he caught a touchdown pass just a short time earlier, a couple weeks ago.
Against the Eagles, right?
Yeah. The fact of the matter is, they probably saw Tavares King out there and said, okay, whatever, and shrugged their shoulders.
Exactly.
And then he burns him with his blazing speed and goes for the touchdown.
David, we got to run, pal. Great call, though. We appreciate it, okay?
Take care, guys.
Good
Thanks,
one.
Man.
That was very good. That's very good.
And you could tell he watched that game more than once.
That's wonderful. Look, I appreciate that. That's great. That's great.
Jeff in Rhode Island. I'm not sure if Jeff has called since the Giants lost to the Packers. Are you doing all right, Jeff? Are you recovered yet?
Well, let me tell you, it took me a good couple of days to get over it. But
understand,
you know, in the 50 years that I've been following the Giants, it's not the first time I've been disappointed. So I'll live for another day.
Remember, only one team gets the Lombardi at the end of the season. 31 teams shake their heads and don't get it.
And the Giants have gotten it a lot more than a lot of teams have. So
yeah.
Johnny, the good thing is that they exceeded my prediction for the year, which I gave you third week of January last year. I said they'd go 10-6, so they bettered that by one game.
Yep.
So
me too, Jeff.
I'm very pleased about the regular season.
Hey, look, Jeff, this is why I said last Friday, and you weren't on the show, I was on with Lance, and I said, folks, I know you're excited. I know you think they can beat the Packers. I know you think they can make a run. If you go into Green Bay and lose, just remember this fact. It's the last thing I said on the show. If I would have handed you a paper that said 11-5 in the playoffs on September 1st, 98% of you would have signed the damn paper. So don't get too upset, okay?
I think 100.
Yeah.
Yeah, it probably is closer to 100. I know. I mean, I would have been, you know, been there in a second, no doubt. Now, the only thing that really bothers me now is, you know, and I'm glad you get the show on every day, is it's such a long time now the off season just goes on and on and on, and the draft is 3 months away.
You're talking my language.
Football is 8 months away. I mean, you know, it's killing me.
Jeff, I know.
Well,
the offseason is painful.
I know it's not the Giants, Jeff, but you do have 3 good weeks of football left in the season here, and they're going to be fun to watch.
Oh, I'll be having my pad out when the Senior Bowl comes up. I was looking that up today. I'll be doing some scouting for the Giants during the Senior
Very
Bowl
good.
For sure. But it's just such a long way to go. But you know, we all know where the improvements, what positions need to be improved during the off season, and let's just hope that can get straightened out, because it'll be a long way. It'll go a long way if if we come up with a road grader and another good tackle, and we don't have that far to go to get to the Super Bowl level. I don't think really, as opposed to last year. So if we can have the success that we did in the off season, signing players like we did for the defense, if we can translate that to the offensive side, I think we'll be in really good shape. So,
Jeff, hold on a second now. You got your calendar out? You got a pencil?
Yeah.
This is what you need to do. All right. You got to try to bide your time through the off season because it's really, really hard. I get it. It's like going through a root canal. I understand. I go into depression myself. I don't like the off season very much. But here's what you got to do. You got to set these little benchmarks to kind of keep you going.
By the way, God forbid any of us get any time off, according to Tino. He wants us working 24-7, 365. My wife will come murder me, all right?
Underclassmen must declare for the NFL draft by January 16th. So that's a date to look at.
You actually
The East-West Shrine Game is January 21st. You got to scout that game. The 28th is the Senior Bowl. You got to scout that game. Yep. Then you got the combine February 28th to March 6th. And then franchise tags and transition tags March 1st. And then you have the opening of free agent conversations on March 7th. And the 9th is free agency beginning. Those are the key dates that need to keep you alive over the next month and a half.
Wow, so that's interesting. Okay. Franchise designations on March 1st will start while they're running their first events at the combine.
Correct.
Wow.
Correct. So those are key dates, but keep in mind the East-West Shrine Game on the 21st of January, Salud, and the Senior Bowl on January 28th.
Yep.
Those are two
losing
games you want to watch, and I think NFL Network televises the practices all week, do they not?
And Mike Mayock's there, and he breaks down everything, which is fun to watch.
So you got to get into that.
I'll be watching it. No problem there. I'll be watching it. So
don't be a stranger this offseason, Jeff.
Have a good day, guys, okay?
You too, buddy. All right, let's wrap up the show with Andre in Rochester. He's our final caller. What's going on, Andre?
How's it going, guys? I'll be quick.
No, you got time, man. It's only 12:55. Go ahead.
Hello.
First, I want to give thanks to you guys. Yes, I want to give thanks to you guys, first of all, because your show is great. I listen to it and tune in every day.
Thank you.
Thanks for sticking with us.
It's better here. I know we're thinking about getting the offensive lineman in the draft, but I was more thinking about signing offensive linemen, getting a veteran up in here. And it seems like every time we lose DRC, that's when the quarterbacks pick our defense apart. So why not go into the draft thinking about a slot corner, and I'll let you guys go. And Trevor Wade and Cody Sensabaugh, man, I'm thinking if Dante Dion's in here, those are different looks. I'll let you guys get your thoughts.
All right, Andre, I hear what you're saying, but in the preseason, Dante Dion got roasted and toasted too. So I don't think that would have been that big of a difference, to be honest
with
you.
Usually on the outside, though, John.
Fair.
To be fair.
As for a cornerback in the draft, honestly, look, much like you can never have enough pass rushers, you can never have enough good cover guys.
That's true.
And look, Dominique Rodgers-Camardi is over 30 years old. He's not going to last forever. So if you want to start planning for
he
his replacement,
so.
I don't have a problem with that either. So, Andre, I think that's fine. Thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. And look, like I said, pass rushers, corners, you can't really go wrong when you talk about that. And frankly, I'd be okay with a placeholding veteran offensive tackle if you can bring one in to play for a couple years with Eli Manning. Go for it. I'm fine with that.
Except the list is really thin.
Unless someone gets cut you don't expect.
Yeah, and that's the thing, folks, and we talk about this every offseason. You look at the free agent pool, and sometimes that thing fluctuates.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, there's a guy who's a salary cap casualty. There's a guy who has problems with a coaching staff or a new coaching staff, and all of a sudden he finds himself free. So there's some fluidity there, but the core of who's going to be available is on the list right now. You can see who it is by checking around on the internet. And it's going to be a thin crop. And even if a couple of guys get added to it, it's a thin crop. Understand that. Just like it is at defensive end, which is why JPP is probably going to get bowled over.
There's a reason that all these NFL teams threw that crazy money around last year. They knew that was a free agent crop that was filled with prime players in the prime age of their career that could impact you not only just for a year or two, but for 4 or 5 years down the road.
And, you know, let's not kid ourselves, John.
This group this year, not like that.
No, not at all.
You got a couple
not
of
close.
You know, Alshon Jeffrey, I think, right, he was a franchise last year, so he's a guy that's up, but I haven't even really digested the list yet. That's going to be next week, folks. Give me some time here. But, you know, it's not the same.
Know this. That it's become more and more apparent, especially in today's parity-driven game, that if you can't win the trenches, you got a big problem. And consequently, the defensive linemen and the offensive linemen who are on the free agent list are not very good, because those teams who have them are going to do everything they can to keep the best guys they can.
And the ones that are going to be in extremely high demand.
No question. No question about that. Or they're going to be so banged up and on the back ends of their careers that you're going to have to overpay them because you don't know if you're going to get the reliability or the durability out of them that you pay for. It's a really hard thing to do. And that is why, folks, if you can, you build those trenches through the draft so that you have guys who are younger, who are less expensive for a lot of years, and then can go on and stay with your team, and you have some continuity, and you don't have to worry about all this other stuff.
Unfortunately, it's getting harder and harder to find these road-grading offensive linemen in the draft because of the way college football is played these days.
That is also true. That is also true. So, hey, look, great example, and I want to close by saying this. Remchick from Wisconsin. Ryan Remchick is a left tackle who went to a small school, wound up transferring to Wisconsin. He's coming out a year early. Why? The dude had hip problems at the end of this past season. He's having surgery. He's out for 4 months. He's not doing any workouts. He's not doing anything at the combine.
And he's still coming out?
And he just declared the other day he's coming out.
Wow.
Why is he coming out? If the guy was healthy, he'd be a blue-chip offensive tackle, left tackle prospect in the draft. Next year as a senior, he's a lock to go in the top handful of picks. But because it is such a thin draft for offensive tackles, and because free agency is so thin at offensive tackle,
you think he'll go in the second round anyway?
He's going to go first round.
I thought there was only one offensive tackle to go in the first
Robinson's going to go real high. Remchick is going to go in the 20 to 30 range, right where the Giants are picking. As a junior, he's coming out early, and he's coming off hip labrum surgery, but he declared because he knows there's a premium. And he's going to go in the first round, probably right in the area the Giants are picking. I don't know if they should take him or not, but what I will say is there's a great example of the climate that there is right now for offensive linemen, specifically left tackles. That tells you all you need to know.
Before I say goodbye, I want to make the point, too, that Tom Coughlin had his introductory press conference down in Jacksonville today. I watched it on Jaguars.com. It was fun. The best question. It was great. So they go through all their Q&As. Coughlin makes his little speech about, you know, team and all the same stuff we've heard up here for 15 years, which is great. It was vintage Tom.
Yeah.
So they start doing Q&As, and they ask Doug Marrone. And I forget exactly how the question was worded, but the basic idea was, is your whole focus here going to be, above all else, on winning, right? So before Doug Marrone can even answer the question, I'm trying to find the quote. Okay. I think someone posted it. I'll paraphrase. He goes, well, what the heck do you think the goal is? Everything else is all fine and dandy. Doesn't mean anything if you don't win. That's why we're all here. And he just, like, waved his hands up and was all annoyed. It was great. Marrone couldn't even answer the question. It was who they asked the question to. And Tom just jumped in all annoyed. It was great. Fine and dandy.
Wow.
Oh, fantastic.
I guess there aren't too many people in the Jacksonville beat who were there when he was there some years ago.
There were a couple. There were a couple
people. Are there a couple left over?
They did a little online show on Jaguars.com before they started. They had a couple guys that were had been there since Tom was there the first time.
Wow.
But he still had his same navy blue blazer with the little American flag pin. He just had the Jaguars pin instead of the Giants pin on there.
Okay. Good luck, Tom. Seriously. We all hope the best for you.
And you know what? He picked up in a good spot. Because they actually do have some talent on that roster, young players.
And a quarterback.
You know, Jalen Ramsey came on late end of the year. Mm-hmm. Dante Fowler, young pass rusher. Well, you don't know if you have a quarterback, and I think that's the problem.
I think Bortles is okay. You can win with him.
Yeah, well, they said he's their starter right now.
You can win with
him. Who else is it going to be? Not the way he played this year, you can't.
No.
Led the NFL in interceptions.
I still think he's going to be okay.
We'll see. But again, that's something to figure out down there in Jacksonville. Allen Robinson, obviously a very talented wide receiver. TJ Yeldon, a running back, he's okay. Chris Ivory's okay. But they have a lot of talent on defense. They have a lot of high draft picks on defense on that team. They'll have to figure out how to win with Doug Marrone. So we'll see if he can do it. But I think, needless to say, a lot of people here will be secretly rooting for the Jaguars in the AFC to hope Tom has some success.
I wonder if they'll be drafting Syracuse guys.
Oh, I forgot to say.
Why?
Last question of the press conference. To Tom, will you guys be making, is Marrone's the Syracuse coach? Will you guys be making calls up to the Giants to trade for Ryan Nassib? I swear to God.
No!
Yes, and he goes, obviously we can't comment on that because he's a member of another team. But that was the final question of the press conference.
And Ryan's actually a free agent.
That's right. Or sign Ryan Nassib, whatever the case might be.
Anyway. But
I just thought that was funny.
Yeah, I understand. Good stuff. Everybody, we had fun today, folks.
Thanks for joining us. I got Feagles tomorrow. Monday we're off for Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
We are.
Yes.
I just found that out.
I'm telling you that right now.
Okay.
So we'll then be back next Tuesday. But me and Feagles tomorrow at noon. We haven't gotten Jeff's take on the end of the season yet. So you can tune in and get Jeff's take.
For sure.
We'll continue to get some Giants rehab in as the Giant fans try to recover from their season ending a little bit prematurely against the Packers last Sunday. For Paul Dottino, I'm John Schmelk. Thanks so much for being part of the show. We had a lot of fun. We'll see you next time on Giants.com, everybody. Have a wonderful day.
Needed some help from the pieces around him. 201.